Mr. Hessler.
May it please the court, Judge Mannion, Judge Bauer, Judge Sykes. My name is Daniel Hessler. I represent Lemuel Tyra. This case is about two things. It's about what the correct sentencing standard is in the district court and whether that sentencing standard was followed in Mr. Tyra's case. With the first respect to the first question, what the sentencing standard is in the district court, the answer is simple because it's directed by the statute. Under 18 U.S.C. 3553, a district court must impose a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary to comply with the purposes that are listed in 3553. And under the statute, district courts arrive at a point in months, not a range, but a specific point. A court is required by the statute to impose the lowest possible sentence which will achieve the statute's goals, and the guideline range is just one consideration laid out within the statute. And that sufficient but not greater than necessary standard was created by Congress, and therefore it's not overruled by Booker, so it is not advisory. The next question is whether the district court in Mr. Tyra's case applied that standard, and there is at very least no indication that it did. Essentially, the district court said five things. It said, "I hope you've changed." It said, "This is a serious crime." It said, I'm paraphrasing somewhat, "It's bad that you've been dealing crack for 10 years. I think the guideline range is appropriate, and I'm sentencing you to 108 months. And the question is whether saying the guideline range is appropriate can be interpreted as saying that the court was making a finding that this is the precise sentence which is sufficient but not greater than necessary to comply with the statutory purposes. And I don't think it can be. Saying the guideline range is appropriate is not an approximation for this is the sentence which is sufficient but not greater than necessary.
You'd have to use precisely that language in order to meet your standard?
No.
He says it's appropriate. Doesn't it mean that he thinks it's the guideline standards meet what is necessary for this case?
I think the there is no formula, there is no rote recitation that has to be made.
How would you interpret what he said?
Well,
that it was appropriate.
There's a couple ways to interpret it. I mean, it could be interpreted as saying that the guideline range is correct. It could be interpreted as saying, I think this is a reasonable sentence. Or it could be interpreted as saying, this is the sentence which is sufficient but not greater than necessary. And two of those don't comply with the statute.
One does.
And one does.
But you can interpret it that way.
You could, but...
If I recall, our rule is that we're supposed to support the finding of the district court on whatever in the record will support it.
At the same time, the district court...
Well, am I correct in what I just said as a matter of law?
You are. At the same time, the district court has an obligation to put something enough in the record to allow this court to feel comfortable.
Well, I wish you had said more. I'd feel a lot more comfortable, but I want to know whether just my level of comfort reached when I think that you can interpret what he said as complying with the law.
I suggest it doesn't. If he had said nothing at all, if he had said simply 108 months, it's possible that he could have been applying the correct standard, but I think that would be clearly, that would leave neither the court nor the defendant nor the public confident that the standard had been followed. And I think that it is important that that there would be some confidence that the standard is followed.
How does your argument square with the presumption of reasonableness that we accord a sentence that's within the appropriately calculated guidelines range? I mean, it seems to me you're arguing that there was some sort of a legal error here.
That's correct.
But we're required to give this sentence the presumption of reasonableness, and it's your burden to overcome that on review.
The presumption of reasonableness assumes that the district court below has already made a finding that this a particular sentence is the sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary. When that finding hasn't been made, then there's essentially been a procedural error. I think I cited the Crosby case in my briefs for the proposition that a sentence, even if it's within the guideline range, can be unreasonable if it's if the statute isn't followed in reaching it. If the judge had rolled the dice and come up with 108, it would be within the guideline range, but I would suggest that's not a reasonable sentence because it doesn't follow the statute.
Well, there's more here than a roll of the dice, I think.
There is. I'm using the extreme, but the question is, did the judge ask himself the question, would a lesser sentence be sufficient? And if the judge did not do that, and that is what's required by 3553, then the judge has not followed the statute.
Well, our post-Booker case law says that if the judge selects a sentence within the guidelines range, he or she is required to say very little to justify that in order to get affirmed on reasonableness review. So I'm trying to square your argument with the case law post-Booker.
Had the judge selected the 108 months and said this is the sentence which is said in whatever words made it clear that he was following the standard, it would, Mikiatuk would create a presumption of reasonableness. But if the judge were to say, you know, I think 60 months would do, but I want to give 108 months, then that 108 months is not a reasonable sentence. So it's not just the number, but it is the fact of the correct standard being applied.
Right, I understand that, but I think given the deferential nature of the appellate standard of review, we're required to, as Judge Bauer was suggesting, infer that the judge's statement, I think this is an appropriate sentence, complies with the procedural requirements of 3553A, rather than infer that it doesn't, which is what you're asking us to do. You're asking us to give it sort of the construction that would conclude that the judge didn't know what he was doing, basically. And that doesn't square, I don't think, with the deferential standard of review.
It may not, but again, the district court judge does have an obligation to make a record that he is following the correct standards. And particularly at this point in time when the standards are, and this was May of 2005, there's nothing in the record suggesting that Judge Aspin had a post-Booker case prior to this. There's nothing suggesting otherwise, but it was very early on post-Booker. It is hard to assume that judges, without saying anything at all, are following a standard which really had not been in place for 17 years.
Well, he did get a safety valve reduction, didn't he?
He did.
And what did that brought the low end down?
That brought the low end down, and then he said, when I asked for a lower sentence based upon the fact that he had substantial evidence of post-offense rehabilitation, the judge said, I took that into account in granting the safety valve reduction, which doesn't quite make sense because safety valve covers something different.
Well, did he get something he shouldn't have gotten then?
No. He got safety valve because safety valve was correct, but then the judge took that factor into consideration in 3553. Had the judge apply the right standard, I probably wouldn't have an argument here. But there is a strong argument. There was a strong argument then to be made that Lemuel Tyra did not need 9 years in jail in order to accomplish the statutory goals, and it's not clear that Judge Aspin made a ruling on that question.
But he did sell drugs for 10 years.
He did.
And the judge observed that as being a fair amount of time. If you want to reserve the rest of your time, you go ahead.
I do. Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Lum?
May it please the court.
I'm sorry, that's not your name. Say your name.
May it please the court. Patrick McGovern for the United States. Your Honors, I think it's pretty clear from the record, the sentencing transcript specifically, that the judge did give meaningful consideration to the 3553A factors and the guidelines. In fact, if you look at the sentencing transcript, it was defense counsel himself who went through the 3553A A factors, and if you look at the transcript, it's pretty clear that the judge was listening and engaged in the defendant's argument. Ultimately, the district judge commented on the seriousness of the offense, the background of the defendant, the fact that he had been dealing crack for 10 years, and he thought correctly and reasonably so that 108 months, the low end of the guideline range, was appropriate. And also, I think there were two instances in the record that Judge Aspin was well aware that the guidelines were advisory. So he knew he was in the post-Booker world. It was May 2005, but it was pretty clear at that point to the experienced district court that the guidelines were advisory. If there are no other questions, by your honors, the government would just rest on its arguments in its brief and ask this court to affirm the sentence of Mr. Tyra.
I did one thing. He did get the safety valve.
He did, your honor.
And then what was the reason for that? What did the judge say as far as giving that?
The one point in the safety valve that was contested at the sentencing hearing, and Judge Aspin heard extensive argument from the government and Mr. Hessler at the time, was whether Mr. Tyra was completely truthful about his drug dealing activities over the past 10 years. It was the government's position that he was not, because he could not provide details as to who his customers and suppliers were. But ultimately, Judge Aspin found by a preponderance of the evidence that Mr. Tyra had been completely truthful on that fifth prong of the safety valve analysis, and the fact that he did not have a criminal history or more than one criminal history point, and that he satisfied the other factors for the safety valve. And ultimately, Judge Aspin, after hearing the argument, ruled in Mr. Tyra's favor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Hessler?
I have a couple comments based upon the government's argument. First, yes, Judge Aspin, there is some record that he considered the factors, and he did consider the guidelines. The question is not the factors. The question is whether he considered the appropriate sentencing standard out of 3553. We could compare the Cunningham case, which I cited in my brief, where essentially the error in the district court below was that the court didn't consider some of the factors that were raised by the defense. This is slightly different. This is something where the factors were addressed, although briefly, but the standard was not. In Cunningham, the judge specifically thought about should I impose a lower sentence and decided not to. In this case, the judge talked about the factors, you know, the history of crack dealing, the fact that he spent a year and a half on bond and seemed to have just done beautifully, and the fact that he seemed to have grown out of things. But he didn't consider the question, which is required by the statute, of is a lower sentence sufficient? My second point...
You had to hurry because your red light's on.
Very briefly. My second point would be, yes, the judge said that, recognized that the discussion was somewhat academic, that was his phrase. But recognizing that the guidelines are advisory is not the same as recognizing that 3553 poses an obligation for the court to impose a sentence which is sufficient but not greater than necessary, and that those are two different things.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement. Proceed with the third case.